Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. If you got a problem, and now, your host, Gary Knoll.
If you need a hand, I can assure you this, I can help. I got two strong arms, I can help.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Once again, it's a pleasure to be able to share an empowering hour, and we do have an empowering hour. We begin with a study from Turkey, from the Ersay University, an article published in the Journal of Cancer Research and Therapeutics, and it's good news because curcumin, that's the active ingredient in turmeric, is found to suppress cancer growth in clinical trials. The Turkish researchers reviewed findings from clinical trials regarding the effect of curcumin on different types of human cancers, such as chronic myeloid leukemia, multiple myeloma, prostate cancer, colorectal cancer, and breast cancer. And it was really important because, oh, by the way, the chronic myeloid leukemia is a type of blood cancer that's caused by a genetic change in myeloid cells, the cells near blood marrow that eventually mature into red blood cells and platelets and white blood cells. And so what they found in this study was that the curcumin supplementation resulted in a far greater decrease in nitric oxide levels than the treatment alone, and it was very beneficial to the cancer. So it stopped growing. So in just lay language, curcumin is able to stop cancer cells from growing. And I won't go into the science of it. It's a little too technical, but basically curcumin upsets the balance between bone degrading elements and bone forming cells. And that this type of cancer triggers the breakdown of bones while hindering bone repair and formation. But in a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial involving patients with that particular type of cancer and also what is called a smoldering multiple myeloma, researchers found that treatment with curcumin for 3 months every day helped decrease the progression of both diseases. And there are multiple studies that have shown that curcumin not only inhibits the proliferation of multiple myeloma cells, but it also suppresses the formation of bone-degrading cells. So there's a dual action, and it's very important. From Baylor College of Medicine, Dee Manos, that's M-A-N-N-O-S-E, a lot of runners use that, reduces age-triggered changes in urinary tract that increase susceptibility to urinary tract infections. Simply stated that aging possesses a number of challenges to the body's well-being. One of the most important being an increased susceptibility to multiple diseases, including urinary tract infections. Now, the connection between aging and the more prevalent urinary tract infections is not well understood, but now researchers at Baylor College of Medicine have found an explanation. This was published in the journal Developmental Cell that compared to younger counterparts, the aging urinary tract in animal models changes how it functions at the cellular level in ways that seem to favor the establishment and recurrence of these infections. So, the natural sugar called D-mannose reduces the severity of aging-associated decline in urinary tract functionality, which shows that this common over-the-counter supplement, natural, non-toxic, could improve your dysfunction in this area that helps reduce your risk of urinary tract infections. And by the way, for younger people, urinary tract infections are not common. But when you start looking at older people over the age of 40, actually over the age of 35, then you're far more susceptible to this. So, one more way to help it. Now, eating meals early can reduce cardiovascular risk. That's the National Research Institute for Agricultural Food and Sciences and Environment. In lay language, the modern lifestyle of Western societies, Great Britain, Ireland, Scotland, United States, these societies have very common diets. None of them are good. They're all bad. They all cause disease. And yet people love the taste of salty and crunchy and sweet and lots of food, far more than what their body can actually utilize. So we end up with obesity. I'm just writing a chapter last night on obesity in children for my new book, which hopefully will be finished within the next 3 weeks and then gets to the publisher. So all the information and it comes from Orthodox Science. But in any case, I was looking at the astronomical level of obesity in young people. It's almost 20%. Wow. I knew of two overweight kids when I went to high school. That was it. And because we ran everywhere and we biked everywhere and till we were old enough to drive, but we were all very athletic. Boy, that's changed. And mind you, when you look at how obese young people are, and then you start seeing how obese their parents are, it's familial, meaning it's in the family, and it's conditioned and propagandized over a period of years. Anyhow, cut your life short. And it means that if you're 12 years old and you're obese, you have a very high probability of having heart disease, different cancers, and other conditions that are going to end your life early. Not good. So it should be something all of us pay attention to. But the reality is, we won't and we don't. There's a whole unique phenomenon now where prevention is no longer considered an adequate step to better health. We just don't prevent anything. You know, we don't prevent tooth decay. We don't prevent heart disease, cancer, obesity, diabetes, depression, anxiety. We don't prevent diddly squat. I'll get into that on an upcoming classroom on the air. In any case, there are specific eating habits, such as eating dinner late or skipping breakfast and having an energy drink, which is loaded with caffeine, 200-400 milligrams, or having no breakfast at all and just having coffee. In addition to this, the daily cycle of food intake, meaning meals and then snacks, and always unhealthy snacks, what they found is alternating with periods of fasting, synchronizing the peripheral clocks or circadian rhythms of the body's various organs, thus it influences cardiometabolic functions like your blood pressure regulation. What is called chrononutrition is emerging as an important new field for understanding the relationship between timing your food take, when do you eat, what time of day do you eat your meals, and your circadian rhythms, and your blood pressure, and your health, and your blood sugar. Very big issue. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications. Scientists used data from 103,000 participants in the NutriNet Santi cohort, and 79% who were women, and average age was 42, and they kept very careful records of their cardiovascular health and their food intake. And to reduce the risk of bias, the researchers accounted for a large number of confounding factors, socio-demographic, like age, sex, family, situation, etc., and diet, nutritional quality, lifestyle, and sleep. Really good study. And the results simply stated this, that having your first meal later in the day is associated with a higher risk of cardiovascular disease. Simply stated, if you miss breakfast, you increase your risk of a heart attack or stroke. That is important to understand. And in fact, it increases the risk per hour of delay by 6%. And that increases your risk the later you eat of cerebral palsy and vascular diseases. So live a longer life, eat your meals earlier. And ideally, if you can have your dinner, and I realize not everyone can, but if you can have your dinner somewhere between 4 and 6 p.m., that 2-hour sec, that's the best time. And if you can eat your breakfast between, let's say, 7 and 8 in the morning, or even 6 and 7, ideal. Again, not everyone can, but you pay a price if you don't. And finally, from Vanderbilt University Medical Center, eating more nuts. And remember, we're talking about pignolias or pine nuts and Brazil nuts and filberts, pistachios and almonds, cashews and walnuts and peanuts, which are actually legume. These are all terrifically beneficial. I eat them raw. I don't get the toasted, roasted, salted ones because that denatures them. And the oils in them are extremely beneficial for you. So according to the study, eating more nuts can help young people avoid obesity and diabetes. It's that simple. If you eat tree nuts, include them in your diet, it will significantly improve your health, and it will also help you cut the excess calories. That's important. So if you want to live a longer life and be healthier, have raw, healthy nuts into your diet on a regular basis. And women in particular, it helps you. One last quick thing, because I just am in the process of helping someone with pancreatic cancer in stage metastasize. The diet has made all the difference in the world with pancreatic cancer risk. Who says? John Hopkins Pancreatic Cancer Research Center. And where was this published? Nature. And what it says is simple. What you eat plays a critical role in determining whether or not you develop cancer. Pancreatic cancer takes nearly 20 years to develop in the body, but its onset and growth and spread is largely determined by the types of food you eat and whether or not those foods feed or starve the cancer cells. And according to an analysis by an MD, PhD, Donahue, a professor of pathology and oncology at Hopkins Saul Goldman Pancreatic Cancer Research Center, it takes nearly 12 years for the first cancer cells to develop in the pancreas. It then takes another nearly 7 years for them to grow, followed by at least another year for them to spread. It is only in the last 2 to 3 years that the disease actually starts to kill a person, and conventional detection methods are typically unable to detect pancreatic cancer early enough to do much about it. So why not simply have a diet that prevents cancer, the very diet I've been explaining to you? This was published, by the way, in Cancer Causes and Controls, and this also shows the following. Please listen, and listen without reacting. The more meat you eat, the greater your risk of increasing pancreatic cancer. Table sugar in potatoes, especially potatoes like French fries and potato chips, are also implicated, and each is associated with roughly 100% increased risk of developing the disease. Listen again to what I just said so we're clear on it. When you have French fries, when you have meat in the diet, any type of meat, you're increasing by almost 100% the risk of developing pancreatic cancer. Highly cooked potatoes are known to contain cancer-causing carcinogens as well as processed sugars. So when you deep fry potatoes for French fries, and when you also process potato chips, very high temperatures, and also all of your sugars that produce insulin-like growth hormone, which studies have shown encourage the growth of cancer cells. Just telling you. That's the latest on health and healing. And remember, if something can help a disease that is natural, non-toxic in the treatment, then use the reverse. It can also help prevent the same disease. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Rock it, chop it, roll it, do the stop and even stroll it at the hop. When a record starts spinning, you chillips and when you chicken at the hop.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. For the remainder of our program, I'm going to be focusing upon bringing to your attention information that you may not have heard or seen in the past. Right now, we have a confluence of at least 50 major issues that are impacting us all at once. We've never had this before in American history. For example, the war in Ukraine and the conflict in Gaza and Israel, the different regime changes around the world, the growth of BRICS, the BRICS nation, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and now Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Mexico, Argentina, and Nigeria, plus another 40 countries all want to be a part of their development. And why is that important? Because we're all assuming that the dollar is solid, that you invest in assets that the dollar is helping you buy, and then also your credit, and also how much debt you can accumulate and still be solvent. And now all that's about to change. The timeline is not known. It may be a year or less, or maybe 2 years, but it's certainly going to be within the next 2 years that another economic power, mainly China and the BRICS nations, working together, and they're not going into wars. Like, for example, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, a huge amount of income they make. All that's going to be a part of their gross domestic product. They will exceed the European Union, Great Britain, and the United States and Canada. When that happens, and I don't know when it will happen, but it's going to happen based upon the growth, probably within 24 months, the dollar will collapse. How much it will collapse, we don't know. But it will collapse. Therefore, everything based upon the dollar, like your securities, your stock, bonds, real estate, your car, all that's going to depreciate substantially. Well, what about the average American who's having trouble making ends meet as it is? They're just going to be completely destroyed. And we're not doing a single thing to stop it. The derivative bubble, something that should not exist at all, should be illegal. It's up there into the hundreds of trillions of dollars. If one of the top five banks go broke and the derivatives they hold, like $40, $50, $100 trillion, that's a part of their bail-in, then the entire banking system will collapse. We're playing Russian roulette with our economics. We're bankrupt. We're literally bankrupt. We could never pay all the debt that we owe, over $330 trillion in unfunded liabilities and all the other expenses. We just keep spending money as if it doesn't matter. We'll just print more. And there will be a day of reckoning. I'm just asking people to be aware that all these things are happening. Our life expectancy has decreased in some cases by 5 years. 5 years. We're right back to where we were in 1960. We have more obesity in children and adults and more diseases than ever before. And our infrastructure is collapsing. Bridges, dams, levees, roads. We have more crime than ever before. We've legalized theft, and now $4 billion was stolen out of New York City businesses in the last year. $4 billion. So you see, we have a crisis, and it's speeding up. And as one thing collapses, another will collapse. But how did all this happen? Why is this important? Because it all starts with one group of people. And at different times, it's the Republicans, and then it's the Democrats, Republicans, Democrats, but there's someone's behind them. There are people behind it controlling it all. They select the people, they groom the people, they put them in office like the Clintons or the Obamas or the Bushes and the Reagans, and then they control everything. I want to give you an example of this. And you wouldn't know this if you didn't watch the hearings on this that I didn't see any announcement about. And this is Jim Jordan talking with one of the at least uncompromised federal prosecutors who's brought in, named Durham. And the Durham report took several years to complete, and it was only one of four total investigations by the federal government. All of these were meant to see, did Trump collude with Russia to control the outcome of the 2020 election or the 2016 election? And the answer was no in every single case. And yet, here's the thing I want you to think about. At the same time, virtually every day, 24/7, on all the media, you would have people going before these television commentators and saying, we have absolute irrefutable proof that they colluded and this has been investigated. For example, Adam Schiff of California, he said this repeatedly, and it was all lies. Everything was lies. So who created all this? Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and the people in that circle, including Joe Biden. And they got away with it, at least up till now. But I want you to hear what Durham is saying. And Durham is one of these guys that doesn't lie. What his committee found shows that the people who were trying to fix the election were the Democrats, not the Republicans. And yet, not a single column has been written about this in the mainstream media. of how the Democratic Party, at least the corporate Democratic part of the party, has been completely bought and controlled by the military-industrial complex, by big pharma, by big energy, by all the special interest groups. Billions of dollars a year are spent to control Congress. It is the special interest groups that write the bills that then become laws, including at the state level with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. They've caused hundreds and hundreds of laws to be passed, always favoring their corporate interest and always against the interest of the American public. Yet until this was exposed, nobody even knew ALEC existed. They didn't know they were meeting with your state legislators in secret and handing them bills and saying, go back and publish this and get this made as a law. We helped expose that in a series of original investigative reports. They had been around for almost 50 years. That's how systemic this rot is. Let's go to the clip now. Listen carefully to what finally a House committee has brought Durham before them and is asking, because who was behind this? Hillary Clinton. The Clinton and the Democrats, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz and others, paid for dossier. It was called the Steele dossier. Everything in the Steele dossier was a lie. Everything. And there's a lot of different groups that participated in this lie. And then they set about trying to infiltrate and succeeded Trump's campaign and then his cabinet, and then started to take him down with the idea that they could regain power and force Trump out of office or impeach him, get him out, and then Clinton could take his place. Well, legally, that's not how it's supposed to work. The vice president, then the Speaker of the House. Those are the next in line. But they haven't been paying attention to the rule of law at all. Now, the very same FBI that saw that this was false, they knew it was a lie. 5 years ago, they knew that the dossier, 6 years ago, that the dossier was garbage, made up, lies. They did not intervene, that they knew the truth. The same FBI who knew that the Hunter Biden laptop was real and exposed the Biden family to impeachable crimes that have now been made public. And yet one group is saying none of this is true, and the other is having the actual truth and proof and documentation and whistleblowers. So what does it mean when a person is so committed to an ideology that even when they show that the ideology is false, they're not willing to change? They're willing to go ahead with crimes against humanity, like those that are supporting Israel against the Palestinians. Just total genocide. And yet one group is not willing to acknowledge that there's suffering that is important on the Palestinians, but any suffering of the Israelis is real to them, and that's all that counts. One side, a black and white issue. If you're Palestinian, you deserve to die. If you're Israeli, you deserve to live. Well, I believe both deserve to live, and they could, but if we're not for the people being propagandized and convinced through threats. So let's go to the clip, and you'll see how all of what I'm talking about is connected.
That you looked at and said that that ought to affect portions of his report.
And you thought it was appropriate for you to intervene with an independent investigation by the Inspector General because he was reaching a conclusion you disagreed with. You thought that was appropriate.
That's not, the premise isn't right. The Inspector General circulated a draft memo to a number of agencies and persons. Our group was one of them. We were asked to review that draft and bring to his attention any concerns that we had or disagreements.
And when he refused to change his report, you violated
the chairman. I insist on regular order.
Well, it's not even his time. It's Ms. Lofgren's time. So the gentleman yields back to Ms. Lofgren, who's not here. So the time has expired. Mr. Durham, in the summer of 2016, did our government receive intelligence that suggested Secretary Clinton had approved a plan to tie President Trump to Russia?
Yes.
Was that intelligence important enough for Director Brennan to go brief the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, the Attorney General of the United States, and the Director of the FBI?
Yes.
And was that intelligence put then into a memorandum, a referral memorandum?
Yes.
And was that memorandum then given to Director Comey and Agent Strzok?
That's who it was addressed to, yes.
Did Director Comey share that memorandum with the FISA court? Did he share that memorandum with the FISA court? Did Director Comey do that?
I'm not aware of that, if he did.
Did he share it with the lawyers preparing the FISA application?
Not to my knowledge.
Did he share it with the agents on the case working the Crossfire Hurricane case?
No.
Didn't share it with the agents on the case. Can you tell the committee what happened when you took that referral memo and shared it with one of those agents, specifically Supervisory Special Agent Number 1?
We interviewed the first supervisor of the Crossfire investigation, the operational person. We showed him the intelligence information. He indicated he had never seen it before. He immediately became emotional, got up and left the room with his lawyer, spent some time in the hallway, came back.
He was ticked off, wasn't he?
Yes.
He was ticked off because this is something he should have had as an agent on the case. It's important information that the director of the FBI kept from the people doing the investigation.
The information was kept from him.
Who's Charles Dolan?
Charles Dolan is a public relations person here in Washington, D.C. He had prior involvement, professional involvement with the Russian government, representing Russian government interests. He was a person that was associated with Igor Danchenko.
He was also buddies with the Clintons, wasn't he?
He had held positions when President Clinton was president.
In their campaign, advisory to Secretary Clinton's presidential campaign, executive director of the Democrat Governors Association. That's the same Charles Dolan we're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. And wasn't he also a key source for information in the dossier?
He provided some information that was included in
Ritz-Carlton the dossier. Ritz-Carlton stuff,
yes.
The Manafort stuff. In the Crossfire Hurricane investigation and the Mueller investigation, when the FBI interviewed Mr. Dolan, what did he have to say?
To my knowledge, they didn't interview Mr. Dolan.
They didn't interview this guy? Source for the dossier? Key information in the dossier? Buddies with the Clintons, and they didn't talk to him?
No. I mean, we report on that because even Christopher Steele in October 2016 identified Dolan as somebody that might have information.
I find it interesting they didn't talk to him. What? Were there agents on the case who wanted to talk to Mr. Dolan, Mr. Durham?
Yes.
What happened to analyst number one? She kept pushing to talk to Mr. Dolan. She was ultimately turned down. What happened to her the day that she was turned down and said, no, we're not talking to Dolan? What happened to her?
At about the same time, she was assigned to a different project.
They moved her. They said, we can't have this. We can't have that. We can't be looking into the Clintons' buddy, a key source for the dossier. They reassigned her. And then what did she do?
She memorialized it.
She entered a memo to the file because she said, at some point, the inspector general is going to want to know this information. I'm going to make it sure it's recorded contemporaneously. She put it in the file. It's crazy. They didn't talk to the key source. They kept key intelligence from the investigators. That's how bad this investigation was. But here's the scary part. I don't think anything has changed. The day your report came out, 5 weeks ago, May 15th, you got a letter, Mr. Durham, addressed to you from the general counsel at the FBI, Mr. Jason Jones, writes you this 6-page letter, and he says, not to worry, everything is fine. It's all been worked out at the FBI. He even says on page 2, he says, had the reforms implemented by current FBI leadership, summarized below, been in place in 2016, failures detailed in your report never would have happened, and he underlines it. Said this would never happen because of the reforms we implemented in 2019 and 2020. And then he says on page 4, one of the specific reforms, he says, FBI executive management has instructed investigations should be run out of the field and not from the headquarters. That statement is not true. 5 weeks ago, the FBI wrote you and said everything has changed when in fact it hasn't, and a statement in there is absolutely false. And we know it's false because 2 weeks ago today, we interviewed Stephen D'Antuono, former head of the Washington field office, Mr. Durham, and here's what he said in his transcript. Head of the Washington field office, when the Trump classified document investigation began, he said, that case was handled differently than I would have expected it to be, than any other cases handled. We learned a lot of stuff from Crossfire Hurricane, that headquarters should not work the investigation. It's supposed to be the field offices. My concern is that the Department of Justice was not following these principles. Nothing is, and that's the thing that scares me the most. Nothing has changed. Mr. Durham, let me just finish with this. 60% of Americans now believe there's a double standard at the Justice Department. You know why they believe that? Because there is. That has got to change. And I don't think more training, more rules is going to do it. I think we have to fundamentally change the FISA process, and we have to use the appropriations process to limit how American tax dollars are spent at the Department of Justice. I yield back.
Or favor. I believe you did that. I'm disappointed in some of my colleagues that have said disparaging remarks about you. I've seen very few that actually talk about your report. They want to talk about everything else, which tells me you're onto something. I'd also yield the balance of my time to the chairman.
I appreciate the gentleman for yielding. So Danchenko is the primary subsource. A few years before he does this work, he was investigated by the FBI for espionage. Is that right, Mr. Durham?
Correct.
And that case was halted because the FBI thought he'd left the country, right?
Correct.
Had he left the country?
No.
Where was he living?
He remained living in the place that he was living when they opened the investigation.
Right here in D.C., right?
Yeah.
He hadn't left anywhere. He's right here in D.C., and we're going to stop this. And then they go hire him, use the tax money of the people I get the privilege of representing to pay this guy who they obviously knew was a Russian spy. They hire him, who's the source of all the false information. Is that true?
They paid him. They hired him, and they paid him.
Couple hundred thousand, if I recall, right?
It's over $200,000.
Yeah, and then this guy is hanging out with Dolan, Charles Dolan, who's a buddy of the Clintons, who's also a source for the false dossier that was used to spy on an American citizen. He's hanging out with Dolan. In fact, don't they meet on a park bench somewhere in Arlington, Virginia on New Year's Day?
New Year's Day, middle of the day.
I mean, this is straight out of the movies, right? And the FBI says, but we're not going to talk to Charles Dolan. I mean, this is two of the dumbest things I've ever heard of. They won't talk to, they pay a guy who's a Russian spy who's the source of the dossier. The other source of the dossier is Charles Dolan, who meets with that guy on a park bench in Arlington, and they don't want to interview him. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, but that's what Comey's FBI did. And they're still doing this kind of baloney because Mr. D'Antuono told us so, running operations, running investigations out of headquarters instead of assigning a U.S. attorney, a job you did for a long time and did very well. That is a huge problem. And your report, that's why your report's valuable.
I'd like your input. Now we're going to go to something different. I want you to see why our democracy no longer exists. We have a totalitarian government. Everything they do is to take more control away from we, the people, and put it in the hands of technocrats and bureaucrats. And it's time that the silent majority understood that if you don't speak up, you're not going to be able to speak up. Because even if you told the truth, they'll say it's hate speech or disinformation. Al Gore just said at a conference, environmental conference, that all these independent media, like Global Research, like Progressive Radio Network, like my writings, that these shouldn't exist because they're only promoting disinformation. That the only media you should care for are the mainstream media, the New York Times. But these have been shown not to be accurate about anything on important issues. That's Al Gore. He finally went public to show who he is really, and we told you who he was and proved it over two decades ago. Here is person speaking about the loss of democracy, and we play him on a regular basis, and I think it's important that we listen to what he has to say. Neil Oliver.
I said last week that I wanted to kind of keep the season in mind, keep Christmas in mind as far as possible. But I'm not naive enough to think that I can make it all about carol singing and mince pies, not through these weeks, months and years through which we're living. But I can certainly say, it's the season of Advent now, throughout December. Advent means the coming, the imminent arrival of. And it does feel to me, and has for a while, like something is coming. Change. Some significant change in perspective. And I think the something that's coming might be the undeniable revelation of the mindset of what I characterise as the anti-human globalists who've been working for so long to make life hard and so miserable for so many. More and more people are talking also about apocalypse. which is a word that's kind of broadly misunderstood in many ways. Ultimately, etymologically, apocalypse is, well, it's from a Greek verb, and it means to take the cover off, to reveal, and to expose. And I think, I am certain, that for good or ill, during next year, during 2024, the truth of it all will no longer be hidden from us. Occult, that's another word that's misunderstood. That just means out of sight, hidden. Doesn't mean, doesn't have magical connotations. It just means hidden. But I think that which has been hidden from us will be hidden from us no longer. Because I don't think it'll be possible to keep so much hidden. It'll be too obvious if it isn't already obvious. Next year, 2024, is going to be a big one. There's a presidential election in the United States of America. That makes it big all on its own. And this time out, the American people are being prepared for an event like no other. Supporters of the Democrat Party are being told in no uncertain terms that it's Joe Biden or nothing. No other candidate is contemplated or offered, and perhaps none is to be tolerated. In the meantime, all efforts are made by the Democrats to put in jail, to put behind bars, the Republican they fear and loathe most of all, which is Donald Trump. And it makes for a truly bizarre spectacle, the like of which, as I say, we have not seen before. And all of it, apparently, yes, that's what we're told, all of the suppression and indicting of Trump, and the censorship and the silencing of information inconvenient to the powers that be, all of that and more besides is being done in the name of saving democracy itself. Well, thank you very much. Suppressing to save democracy is like having sex to preserve virginity. It's a ludicrous concept. Joe Biden appears, well, severely compromised cognitively, to put it kindly. Many critics say that he's simply senile. He has corruption allegations all over him like a cheap suit, has had for years. His son, Hunter Biden, he of the crack cocaine and the prostitutes and the bungs and the kickbacks, hangs around Joe Biden's neck like an albatross. The Democrat attack on Trump grows ever more hysterical. This week, he's being called a dictator. He's being described as bad or worse than Hitler and Mussolini combined, which seems strange to say, given that he didn't actually invade anywhere or launch any attacks on anyone while he was president, most unusually for an American president. It's not even novel anymore to say that the globalist plan was supposed to have seen 8 years of Barack Obama, which happened, followed immediately by 8 years of Hillary Clinton, which didn't happen. That would have given the globalists and the warmongers time to finish the job. But then, Trump. Donald J. Trump in the White House was not supposed to happen, and so all hell was let loose. Here in the UK, Brexit was not supposed to happen. But both did, Trump and Brexit, in the same year, 2016. So 2024 is going to be a bumpy road. Here in the UK, we have the Uni Party to contend with, Conservative and Labour, as two desiccated testicles taking up space in the same saggy scrotum. Neither has anything left to give. No juice at all. We have our own election looming soon enough, and the fact is that most of the electorate simply don't care. Most of the electorate, or vast swathes anyway, are finally persuaded that it makes no difference if they vote, who they vote for, dumb or dumber, bad or worse, either option, well, a guarantee of more misery for more people, as the politicians, so-called, faithfully do the bidding of the unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats of the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization and the rest of the entities known to us by acronyms, and the Bank for International Settlements that takes control of everybody's money. The world's money, the flow of money around the world, is all controlled out of Basel in Switzerland. There's some excited talk of voting for independent candidates, but I just don't see it. I would say politics is a dead parrot. It has ceased to be. One of the central problems for the globalists is that fewer and fewer people believe the lies in the compliant media anymore, the compliant media that the globalists pay for. So whatever they bring out next, whatever they're contemplating bringing out next, cyber attack by China maybe, or airborne Ebola, or another terrorist atrocity, or an assassination maybe of some or other troublesome character, whatever happens next, too many people like me will look on at the official explanation and the hand-wringing and the confected horror and say, aye, right, there just won't be anything left in the bank account of belief. Nobody believes it anymore, or not enough that matter. The Democrats in the United States call Trump a fascist, while real fascism is all around us in the form of Klaus Schwab's stakeholder capitalism, he of the World Economic Forum. And stakeholder capitalism is actual fascism, by which I mean the power and the decision-making are snatched away from the people of nation-states and gifted in their entirety to boardrooms and bankers. That's who runs the world now, not us. All across Europe and elsewhere, there are so-called populist movements on the rise. Populist, which just means of the people, and should be a wholesome expression. Populist has been made a dirty word. It's an insult. It's just another way of saying that anyone interested in seeing the people have a say in the running of their countries. Well, belong in Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables. Democracy is dead. Certainly dead. But in recent times, I've been wondering at the extent to which we ever really had democracy. I wonder if we weren't just gulled into thinking we were making choices between apparently competing ideologies. I wonder if that game ever really mattered. I wonder if it was just an illusion, a mirage, a sweet treat for the masses, while the power lay and lies where it always has and does, in the hands of a narrow group. Call them what you will, it changes down through the centuries. Aristocrats, oligarchs, crime families, whatever. I look back at World War II and I wonder just exactly who won and who lost. All those Nazis collected by the United States in Operation Paperclip and just transplanted to the United States in their thousands, where they took up positions of authority and power in the institutions, in academia, then in politics. We were told in The Usual Suspects that the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was persuading the world he didn't exist. But I ask, did the Nazis and the rest of the fascists ever really lose, or did they just persuade the world they didn't exist? And now, Advent, we're at a wondrous and dangerous crossroads in history. The beast, the globalists, are pointing one way, leading one way. Anti-human, anti-life itself, certainly anti-freedom, anti-people. And in the other direction, down the other road, are those that love their families, love their children, love life, and all of life's promise and potential. That's the separation now. That's the choice. For years now, I'm sure I've said this before, I've said that I feel like I'm falling. it's that sensation of weightlessness that strikes when you're in a car and it goes quickly and unexpectedly over a humpback bridge and your stomach flips. I feel that the world of before fell out from beneath my feet 2 or 3 years ago, and that I've been falling through space ever since, never finding my way onto, never landing on solid ground. At the heart of the matter is the revelation that has already happened or shortly will. The mask is off. The wearers of the mask, the erstwhile wearers of the mask, seem not to care that we can see them now and see who they are and see what they're about. They know we know they're lying. But that's the point. We're supposed to know. And I would say they thought they had us. They called for lockdown. They rolled the dice and called for lockdown and a great reset, and surely could hardly believe their eyes when so much of the world did as it was told, went home and shut the doors. So they thought they had us, and they got giddy. They got drunk with the power and the potential. And so on it came then. They got all their toys out of the box at that point. War, net zero, climate crisis, more war, men can be women can be men, it's right to change the sex of children, it's right to take away people's money, people's freedom, people's rights. That's what they thought. That's what they thought they could do. That's what they tried to do. That's what they started doing. But in fact, they overlooked and were ultimately taken by surprise by too many of us. And here we are, looking them straight in the eye, ready to win the ultimate game of chicken. The fact is, the globalist warmongers, the anti-human cabal, have blinked first. We haven't got them down yet, but they're wounded and they're exposed as never before. But a wounded predator, a wounded lion, is the most dangerous when it's in its death throes. It's as it fights to the end that it's capable of doing the most awful damage. So it's coming. Next year we'll see more of it, more of them. But in the end, it's a good thing, this advent, this coming, this apocalypse, this revealing. It had to happen eventually. And now is the time.
This next clip is by a medical doctor and a scientist, Dr. Joan Boudin, B-E-A-U-D-O-I-N. And he's talking about the faces of vaccine injury in Massachusetts. This was on May 18th, 2023 at Nurse Hall in Massachusetts State House. And some of this will be silent because he de-identifies the victims. But listen to what he's saying. 5,000 individuals in Massachusetts were known to have died from the vaccine, yet that was not reported as it should have been, and how all the figures were manipulated, and how all this is done everywhere. Listen to the clip. Telling the truth, something we have not heard from any of the media or the scientific community or the medical community that supports the corruption of the vaccine.
My name doesn't matter. I'm here to talk for other people. And I was driving to the gym one time, and on the news it said a 7-year-old girl died from COVID. That didn't happen. There's no way that happened. So I did a public records request. I have 500,000 unredacted death certificates from Massachusetts. Every cause of death, every person, all their names, their parents' names, where they're from, medical examiner's office number, everything. So that little girl, it said on her death certificate, complications of coronavirus 19 viral infection. That's the only thing it says in part one. But there's a VAERS record of a 7-year-old girl from Massachusetts, one of only four. Now, the girl, she died on January 18th, 2022. The VAERS record is of a 7-year-old girl from Massachusetts injected on January 13th. The VAERS record says, first injection, injected in 5 minutes, vomited for 8 to 10 hours thereafter. So they waited, and they gave her another injection. Severe abdominal pain, 103-degree fever, didn't have a bowel movement for 3 days. She was dead in 4.5 days. It's all facts. It's sworn to under oath in federal court, District of Massachusetts. So they wrote COVID on the death certificate, but I think we know what really killed her. She was 30 years old, and she died from a stroke. Now, the VAERS report on it said that she had gone to the ER twice. They sent her home with migraines. The third time, her family brought her because she didn't recognize her sister. Then she had a seizure. She was paralyzed in half her body. The MRI showed brain lesions. She was brain dead within a couple days, and the family pulled the plug 2 weeks later. That was in 21. She died 2 weeks before she had a stroke. Intracranial hemorrhage in the setting of thrombocytopenia 11 days after vaccination. That's what it says on the death certificate. But when the death certificate goes to the CDC, they use an automatic parser. The vaccine as a cause of death did not get coded. There are ICD-10 codes, so it's not there as a cause, even though it's the root cause. I'll tell you about a little bit more about, but 5 weeks after I was 17 years old. This is all Massachusetts. It's 20 miles away. Her date of death is June 11th. There's a VAERS report for a girl who was injected on May 23rd. She reacted almost right away with a bad headache. She went to her primary care physician twice that week, and when her headache resolved, she got her second injection. She died of a cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, a hemorrhagic stroke. Her head tried to push her brain down through her neck. Horrendously painful. And the interesting thing about a CVST, cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, and from at 17 years old, and 2 weeks before from intracranial hemorrhage in the setting of thrombocytopenia, is that the brief report written by six doctors from Harvard Medical College, Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital, it's called Fatal Post-COVID mRNA Vaccine-Associated Cerebral Ischemia. They're telling you in the title that the death of this girl was caused by the vaccine that caused a stroke. It's in the title. In fact, it's in every paragraph of that report. And one of the paragraphs states, but this isn't a CVST type of stroke, which is common. Well, they said there are several reports from these COVID-19 vaccines. So they know there are several reports of a CVST type of stroke. And that's 5 weeks later. And what's frequent, it says, where thrombocytopenia is frequent, 2 weeks before. So the strokes that they say there are several reports and a number of reports, and it's frequent, it's three women in 3 months from Massachusetts who died from strokes. I don't want to leave out, she was only 12 years old. There's a friend in California who has a site, VAERSAware.com. I told him, send me what you got from Massachusetts, because there's only so much time I have analyzing the databases. He sent me one in February. February 17th, the VAERS report came out of a girl who died in August. It took 6 months for the report to come out. The report is of a girl who died, excuse me, it doesn't say she died. Yes, it does. August 29th is when she died in the report. I looked it up in the death certificate database. Sure enough, the girl died, 17 years old. How do I know it's the same girl? Because both the VAERS report and the death certificate state cerebellar tonsillar and bilateral uncal herniation. It's the only time I've ever seen that, and I've seen thousands and thousands of death certificates. It's the same girl. She was injected on August 3rd, so in the same month. And that's more than a year. That's 15 months after the three women I just told you about. So that's four strokes in four women in Massachusetts. I have hundreds of these, but there's only 3 minutes. So the vaccine has killed a lot of people. In fact, from the data, I'll just close with this, and I can stand behind this, and I'll swear to it in federal court. I already have. More than 4,000 people in Massachusetts alone have died from the vaccine. If you guys know me, you know where I get that number from. Cardiac arrhythmia, cardiac arrest, pulmonary embolism, acute post-hemorrhagic anemia, thrombocytopenia, the list goes on. Thanks for your time.
And finally on this segment, I want to report from the expose of December 5th, 2023, quote, death sentence. 1 million COVID vaccinated have died in England compared to just 61,000 unvaccinated in a 2-year period, despite 30% of the population refusing a single dose of the vaccine. So this is shocking data released by the UK government, shows that over the past 2 years, the vaccinated population, the ones that were supposed to be protected, that Howard Stern and everyone else said with absolute certainty, they should go off the air. They should be so ashamed because of how many people died or got sick or injured because they trusted these people. Quote, the vaccinated population in England have suffered an outrageous number of deaths compared to the unvaccinated population, despite the fact that approximately 30% of the population has not even had a single dose of the vaccine. According to the UK government, department known as the UK Health Agency, by the 3rd of July, 2022, 18.9 million people had refused the first dose of the COVID injection. 21.5 million people had refused the second dose of the COVID injection, alongside 2.6 million people who had received the first dose but refused the second, and 30 million people who had refused the third dose of the COVID injection, along with 8.9 million people who had received the second dose but refused the third. And then they have the charts, the graphs. Whoa. And it shows all these people, over 1 million people, died directly from the vaccine in Great Britain. Mind you, Great Britain has more accurate records than our VAERS system in the United States. And guess who had only 66? So it meant that 97% of the people who died were vaccinated. The unvaccinated lived. Remember that, because there's going to be another, probably in the next 12 months, there'll be another pandemic. The World Health Organization will want to control the protocols, working with the same manufacturers, the same public spokesperson, the same Bill Gates. They'll go forth on the media, and the media will dutifully say, this is a new pandemic, we've got to get vaccinated, and they'll have some vaccines for you. Just remember all this. It was the vaccinated, the compliant, those who stood in line, didn't question, and trusted, who died. 1 million alone, thus far, in the Great Britain. But this also compromises the immune system. So you may live for a year, or two, or three. But if you got vaccinated, you're at a greater risk of dying. So just keep this in mind. Now imagine the 500,000 that we've reported died in the United States. What if we compared our population size to Great Britain's, it would have meant that about 2.5 million people died in the United States, if you projected more accurate figures. And that's it on these issues. I want to thank you all for taking your time. We're going to take a quick break. If anyone wants to call in at 888-874-4888, it's your chance now. We've shared a lot of information with you about why we don't deal with the truth. We deal with its opposite. And we deal with the people who will do anything to stay in power and lie and cheat and use our government agencies against us. And it doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. It matters that those in power only care about themselves and the groups they represent, or the lobbyists that have put money in their campaigns and pockets, or the number of people that go from being a senator or a House member and then go right into these major industries and be their spokesperson. It's criminal. And yet we tolerate it, at least up till now. But the house is falling. All of it is falling. Our entire society is at risk of collapsing and going into tribal states. Unfortunately, you'll see this happening. Don't take my word for it. It's going to be coming down hard. Well, we're at the end of another day and another program, but we're not at the end of the story. By the way, go to go to GaryNall.com. I have so many articles there for you to download. And also join the newsletter. It's only, what is it? Something really ridiculous, like, you know, 40 cents a day, $7 or so a month. And you're getting tremendous amount of information, information that could make a difference in your life. Go to GaryNall.com, scroll down, you'll see the newsletter, and sign up for it. Have a nice day, everyone.